Why do some people say tomato and others say tomato? Where do different accents come from and why? And why is it that we make judgments about people from the way they talk? Our guest is going to answer those questions. Dr. Rob Drummond is Professor of Sociolinguistics at Manchester Metropolitan University. His book is called You're All Talk, Why We Are the Way We Speak. Kia ora, Rob. Welcome to 9 to Noon and welcome to New Zealand.
Good morning. Thank you very much.
I don't want to be all sort of Kiwi-centric. I did notice on page 82, someone somewhere had declared New Zealand named sexiest accent in the world. I don't know where they were and what they were thinking.
Yeah, this happens quite a lot. And I think, to be fair, the number of times these kind of news stories come around, I think pretty much every accent at some point has been named the sexiest or the most attractive or the most kind of the most inspirational. I think we've all kind of had our turn with that, to be honest. You know, of course, the New Zealand one is particularly good, but I'm just saying.
Yeah, right. Which is another local saying. I always think we sound like we're sort of struggling. It's like you have to pull the sounds out of our mouths. It's like the vowels are all sort of buried somewhere and we have to reach down and drag them out and torture them on the way. Some more from page 82. Birmingham accent ranked least attractive in the UK and even Wolverhampton is higher. The one here, Scousers, if I pronounce that right, Andrew, my colleagues from Manchester, Scousers, fine. Scousers have the least intelligent and least trustworthy accent, while Devonians have the friendliest. Boston accent ranked most annoying in America. Boston. But there's some truth behind these, a lot of judgment, and that's really what this is about, isn't it? We judge accents, Rob.
Yeah, we really do. I think we can be very harsh on people depending on the way they speak, or we can be quite positive towards them. But it really is a big judgment. And yeah, some of these stories, you know, they're often quite kind of they're not very serious, and the research behind them is usually really weak. But people still, you know, really listen to them, and everybody has opinions on different accents. You just, you know, when I just describe what I do for a living to people, every single person has some kind of a story about their own accent or about somebody else's accent or what they like and what they don't like. And it's, you know, in some ways it can be quite superficial and not that important, but in other ways it can be really quite serious, I think.
Well, is there evidence to say that people may miss out on a job, for example, or miss the cut on selection something, for example, because of unconscious bias, because we're making judgments about the way they speak as well as the way they look or what school they went to?
Yeah, they can. And the thing is, it's really hard to pin down with any kind of prejudice or discrimination. It can be quite hard to pin down precisely what has caused it, because everything is interlinked. And when it comes to the way we speak is so much connected to our social class, to where we're from, either in the region or nationally, to do with our gender, to do with our sexuality, even to do with our race and ethnicity. So all of these things are so tightly interwoven with the way we speak. But it's still very acceptable for somebody to kind of comment on the way somebody speaks, to make negative comments, you know, say, oh, you know, I really don't like their accent. I don't like the way they're coming across. But you have to start thinking, is it really about the accent, or is it much more likely something a bit deeper than that? So something that the accent represents. And so people can get away with that. They can just sort of, they can make these comments, and they can, you could imagine some kind of job interview where somebody is saying, oh, you know, this guy's fine, but I don't think our customers will understand him, or he hasn't got really quite the right sort of voice for us. And is it really about that, or is it something a bit more to do with, I don't know, like I say, his class, his kind of race and ethnicity, or whatever?
So it's
and
a proxy. That's a proxy for other prejudices.
Absolutely.
Prejudices. Let's break it down to something incredibly simple. Humans are hardwired towards prejudice, being prejudgment, making an initial assessment of people. And our challenge in civilized societies anyway is to check our prejudices, because they will exist, right? Do you think that accent is underestimated in that picture, or about what you would expect. There must be some kind of purpose to the prejudgments that we make. And in this instance, is it about you're from my tribe, you're not from my tribe? And is it over or underestimated, Rob?
Yeah, I think it's exactly that. I think it's exactly you're part of my tribe and you're not part of this tribe. And I think that it's that link between how we speak and who we are. It's that aspect of identity. And I think that's the reason we still have so many different accents, because you hear about, there'll be news stories about accents disappearing, because obviously in the UK, there are loads of different regional accents, less so in New Zealand, less so in Australia, just because of the history, the length of time English has been there. It didn't have the time to develop in different ways before kind of mass communication came. But we have loads of, there are still some, but not as many, but we have loads of regional accents in the UK, and we still have them. We have this, we have influences from US English, from mass media, loads of communication. Everyone's communicating, traveling, seeing each other, but we still retain these accents. And I think it is because it's our way of saying, look, I belong to this group and I don't belong to that group. And we talk about prejudice, and you're absolutely right. But of course, that can be a, you know, it can be a positive. People can be judging people positively as well. So it's a way of saying, you know, I like this person. That person has my respect because the way they speak represents all of these other shared values. And that can kind of be a good thing in an inclusive type of way. But of course, it can be really damaging when it's excluding others.
One of the things we'll get to, it's how interesting how we will adapt how we speak in order to fit into that tribe. You've got a chapter, I think, entitled "Why Does My Mum Talk Posh on the Phone?" we definitely adapt. But let's look at the history first, because obviously we have different languages that have developed throughout history in different parts of the world. But what's extraordinary is just how distinct the accents can be, even in a geographically small country. Or you know, let's look at the UK, for example. In New Zealand, we have some regional dialects, by all means, but perhaps not quite as extreme as you will get, even within the relatively small borders of the UK. And is this attached to that, just those generations sweeping through, travelling through, over many, many centuries, and as you say, perhaps not mixing as much as we do now. Is this how accents evolve?
Yeah, that's it, exactly. It's with the UK, it's just the history of so many different groups of people living on these islands at different times, and each having different languages, but of course they had to communicate, so these languages developed and changed. And the thing about all natural languages will change over time. That's just a feature of language. So we know, for example, in English, we don't speak in English the same way that they did in Shakespeare's time or in Chaucer's time, or even, you know, much smaller than that. We don't really use English in the same way as our parents or our grandparents or our great-grandparents. And that's not just in the UK, that's everywhere. Language changes. But in the UK, it had that time to develop where people weren't mixing so much, but there would be sort of movements of different groups of people for different reasons. And so those that left language free to develop in different ways. And then, of course, English goes off and starts a new life in the United States or in Australia or New Zealand. And there it's, again, free to develop in a different way. So once you have a group of people who are separate from kind of another group of people, their language will slightly change. And then that becomes a sense of group identity. And that becomes a way of very subtly signaling, again, I belong to this group and I don't belong to that group. And so it's kind of a very natural feature of language. But it's fascinating to see it happen.
We learn language, of course, by doing as children and by modelling off those nearest and dearest to us. So when we look at the elements of language, you've got intonation, inflection, dropping consonants, dragging out vowels, all these things. Most likely learnt from immediate family members and those in our immediate community. But then we do adapt it, don't we? I mean, there are people who will, again, talking from the UK, will speak completely differently, will adopt a more received English, say, in order to work at the BBC. And how does that process happen? Is it deliberate, or is it just instinctive when we are in a different environment to subtly adapt the way we speak?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think you're right. We do acquire the language that we're surrounded by. So as kids, you know, we just adopt whatever we're exposed to. And then that gradually changes from sort of our parents, caregivers, whoever's around. When we start going to school, that becomes the biggest influence, our peers. Our peers overtake our family in that sense. But then, yeah, when we find ourselves in different situations, we do adapt the way we speak. And I think some people do it more than others. And I think it's often to do with somebody's sort of personality. And it's not always a conscious decision. It's not thinking, oh, okay, I need to speak in this way now. I need to emulate them. It's not so much that. It's just some people want to fit in more than others. And so they will, without really thinking about it, their way of speaking will change, just in the same way that other bits of behavior might change as well. But then other people, especially if they move to a different part, say you've got somebody from the UK moving to New Zealand, and they might be going there thinking they really want to be part of that life, and they might have a partner there, and they have friends there, and that they kind of their way of speaking will change. Or they might still have a strong sense of regional identity from where they're from in the UK. That might mean a lot to them. And it could even be that gets stronger in certain situations, that we sort of really, really emphasize our I don't know, our Manchester-ness or our London-ness or our UK-ness generally when we're somewhere else. Because again, it's a big part of who we are.
It's remarkable you say that. There are people who may have lived, say, in New Zealand for 20 or 30 years and still with extremely dense accents, and then others who will... And it does seem to be some particular regional accents that do sustain. Are some accents more malleable than others necessarily?
That's an issue. I don't know if they're more or less malleable. I think it's to do with how far away they are from any sort of perceived standard. So you know, I think in the UK, there are accents that are particularly seen as particularly strong, like, say, an accent like a Newcastle accent or a Glasgow accent. They're seen as strong accents. But what that really means is they're a long way away from the perceived standard of a kind of a London or Southeast England accent. So I guess, you know, you could imagine somebody with a strong Newcastle accent moving to New Zealand, that would take a long time to change, if it was going to change, because those vowel sounds and those sounds that they use are so distinctive. Whereas somebody who's coming from London and moves to New Zealand, that might change more quickly, because the two, they're not a million miles away from each other to start with.
So this received pronunciation that I alluded to, where and who sets the line on what is perceived to be, you know, the gold standard accent?
Yeah, that's really interesting. Now, because this is purely by chance. So this is this way of speaking, this prestige dialect accent, this received pronunciation, you know, which is seen as like kind of BBC English or the Queen's English, the King's English, whatever, in its most sort of extreme form. It's no better than any other way of speaking. It's only there. It only has that position of prestige because that's what the powerful people use. It's gained that prestige from the people having the power. Linguistically, it's no better than any other. So a thing I always tell sort of my students, or when I'm giving talks about the book or whatever, is trying to think what would happen if in the UK, if the capital of England had happened to be somewhere else, if the capital of England had happened to be York, then that would be the prestigious accent. That would be the Queen's English, the King's English. That would be what people are trying to emulate. That would be the BBC accent. And all these people in the southeast of England, where kind of RP is sort of based on, they would be the ones with the regional accent. They'd be the ones where their accent sticks out, and they'll be, you know, in times gone by, they'd have been under pressure to change the way they speak. So it really is just an arbitrary thing in any country, really. there's usually a more prestigious way of speaking. There's kind of a standard way of speaking, and it's only ever gained that prestige because that's the one the powerful people happen to use.
Which is interesting when you think about the UK and its leadership. I'm trying to think how many prime ministers you've had have been through Eton, quite a few.
And there have still been no prime ministers except for Gordon Brown, who hasn't had a pretty close to RP type accent.
And that is also perceived or argued to give people a license in some ways. What they say matters less than the way they say it.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the so you there are lots of accents where, you speak in a certain way and you face kind of criticism and even discrimination and prejudice, and people won't take you seriously, and you're seen as uneducated. But by the same token, there are certain people who can speak with an RP accent and they can say anything and get away with it. It really doesn't. I mean, you don't have to go far back to see various prime ministers and important politicians in the UK who have a particular way of speaking which can hide all sorts of things that are going on. So it's the way people say things is so important.
What's really interesting is how it can change over time. We mentioned this association with power, right? But let's look about this example of the dropping of the G, cooking, shopping, hunting, fishing, shooting. And there was an interesting debate with a former footballer and BBC presenter Alex Scott over this matter and how it was, perceived as being poor speech. But not that's not always been the case. It was once a marker of being of the landed gentry, was it not?
Yeah, exactly. So that's a really nice example of how it's so sort of superficial and arbitrary, how these things work. That this particular pronunciation of hunting, shooting, fishing. So instead of kind of an ing sound, it became an in sound. That did used to be a mark of prestige and nobility, and it has changed. The associations with that particular pronunciation have changed, and Alex Scott was called out for it. And I th by somebody who's who was very sort of high up within society at the time, and he was just kind of criticizing her on Twitter. But it happens a lot, and there's no it's also no coincidence that it happened to a woman, to a working class woman, to a working class woman of color. There are certain people who get an unfair amount of criticism due to the way they speak.
Because of what we see, it is a
It
signal for broader
really
prejudice which can encourage broader prejudice. I don't wish to victim blame, but it is a signal to some people,
it
or a
really is.
trigger for their
It's
prejudices. Yeah.
absolutely, and especially class-based prejudice, I would say.
Interestingly, the evolution of TV, and this is where I've got a lot of feedback coming in. Thank you, listeners, pointing out the Americanization, actually, of a lot of younger New Zealanders' accents, because some of them grew up watching Disney, for example, or gaming does this as well. So things like the vocal fry have sort of become more common here as well amongst a certain generation. So the impact of popular culture and what you are immersed in can change things as well. But part of your research looked at attitudes, the impact of TV, back when TV was the dominant popular culture platform, the influence of that on accent and class. For example, the Northern accents were often comedy characters, right? The Eastern European accents were often untrustworthy characters in the UK. The good for Cockney lad, the chirpy Cockney lad. So some of these prejudices are reinforced by mass media or popular culture.
Yeah, they are. I think it's a really it still happens quite a lot. I think it's getting less, but it still is. There are certain characters will be given certain accents because you can see why it happens. It's not it's a really easy shorthand for a for a kind of a producer, director, whatever, an actor to you need to signal this particular character. Well, instead of spending loads of time giving the background and showing who they are, if they have a particular accent, that just triggers something. So, okay, so we know this person is kind of likely from this background now. We know they have these kind of attitudes. And so you can see what happens, but it does help to reinforce those stereotypes, sometimes positive stereotypes, but sometimes negative stereotypes around particular accents. And you're right, there is an influence in terms of the way people speak. In the past, less so, because TV, the way we, you know, used to consume TV and the media in the 80s and 90s, you know, it was very sort of passive. You know, you sit down and then you watch some stuff. Because remember, in the UK, it was Neighbours was seen as the cause for a change in accents for UK teenagers at the time, thinking that everyone suddenly sounding a bit Australian and blaming it on Neighbours. But the thought that just some, you know, sitting watching half an hour of something a day would have that much of an influence is a bit unlikely. But now, of course, we have so much more. We're exposed to so much more. So young people they're always listening to, you know, watching videos and short clips, and they're exposed to so much more language. So I think there could be more of an effect than there was in the past. And certainly any changes that are happening are likely to be happening a lot more quickly than they did in the past.
I've just been looking at your pages describing how we form vowels. I don't think we have time going into the detail of that, but it can be consonants, dropping a consonant, say. It can be rolling a consonant, like rolling an R, or making a T into a D or vice versa. But is the vowel formation often very prominent in accent formation and accent change?
Yeah, it's mainly the vowels. So most accent differences are through the vowels. There are certain consonants, and pretty much, you know, the ones you've said, and there's not that many more. There are a few, but it's mainly vowels. That's where things change. And of course, the thing about accents, it only has to be a very small change, because most of the sounds are the same. Otherwise, we wouldn't understand each other. But it only has to be a very small change. And I sort of, you can do this yourself. If you just change the way you pronounce one thing, you know, even the consonants, say, like, if you're somebody who usually pronounces T's quite carefully, and then if you suddenly change that to a glottal stop, so instead of saying matter, you start saying matter. If you do it all the other way around, if you're somebody who usually says matter and you start saying matter, you'll really hear a difference. You'll suddenly sound like a very kind of different person, even, because again, it's such an important part of who we are.
We can adapt it depending on who we're talking to, even in the course of a day, although sometimes that is also the word selection as much as accent. Rob, just finally, on dialects in the UK in particular, which is one of the really interesting examples in English-speaking nations anyway, the United States is another, isn't it? Just the extremity in difference. But I'm trying to think of anywhere with more extremes than the UK has for such a small geographic area. What do you think will become predominant over time? Because we've talked about the role of power. And power can be expressed often politically. It can be expressed in terms of who controls public communications and media and popular culture. It's kind of fracturing in our contemporary world, isn't it? People can find their tribes wherever they want online. Do you believe this will affect dominant dialects in the UK in coming times? And if so, how so?
Yeah, I think it will, because I think there'll be less of a need for people to speak in a certain way in order to get into positions of power. So that used to be a real thing, that in order to do anything in a lot of industries, you'd need to speak in a certain way. If you're talking about in kind of obviously in broadcasting, but even just in things like, I don't know, teaching, in education, or in government, anything like that, anything maybe public facing, there are expectations that you'd have a particular accent. Now, those expectations are gradually eroding. So once we start seeing people in positions of power who don't have those particular ways of speaking, that opens the door to other people. So in one hand, it's very foolish to kind of predict what's going to happen with language in the future, because it changes naturally and you can't do much about it. But I imagine that kind of prestige status of received pronunciation and standard English, I think that will start to disappear. And I think we'll start to hear a lot more variation in voices of power in the future. And I think that's a good thing.
Thank you. Dr. Rob Drummond is Professor of Sociolinguistics at Manchester Metropolitan University. His book is called You're All Talk, Why We Are What We Speak.